Order in the court. It's time for Understanding the Law Radio. Well, hi, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Understanding the Law Radio. I'm your host, Peter Lamont. Today, I want to talk about something that I kind of miss, and that is marketing in the 70s and 80s. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, why would you miss marketing in the 70s and 80s compared to what we have today? And I have a whole host of reasons why, but I want to talk about it in relation to how businesses operate today and how this might apply to your business or any business, and then tie in some nostalgic legal questions that I want you to ponder and then answer. All right, so here we go. I want to talk about the fact that how in the 70s and 80s, we as consumers dealt with a marketing world that was really based on tangible items. Now, can you think back, if you are my age, you're a child of the 70s, can you think back to going to, I don't know, McDonald's? And if you remember Star Wars when it came out, soon after the movie, what did McDonald's and or Burger King, it might have been Burger King, what did they have? Do you remember the glasses that they had, the Star Wars drinking glasses? There were like four of them and you could collect them. And then I remember after Star Wars came out, the Star Trek, the motion picture. And that was definitely McDonald's because I remember going to McDonald's before my parents took me to see the movie in the movie theaters. So I definitely know that they had them there because I remember going on, I don't know what highway it was, but it was a very small theater we were going to, and there was a McDonald's there, and we stopped and we got the glasses. I didn't even know what the movie was about, but I was so excited because I got these glasses. I knew who Captain Kirk was, obviously. I mean, I watched Star Trek, but I had no idea what to expect from the movie. But the glasses had me all hyped. How about cereal boxes, right? How many of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s, I don't know about 90s, but 70s and 80s for sure, sat at the breakfast table with the cereal box in front of you, and you read the advertisements, you read the back of the box, and it was like, you know, you were just engrossed in the deepest knowledge that you could possibly attain reading the back of the cereal boxes. And then those boxes that had the prize inside, whatever it might be, maybe it was a Frisbee from, you know, Pop's cereal, or it was a secret decoder thing, or any of those things. I mean, taking that one step further, think back to the movie A Christmas Story, when Ralphie is following along with the radio program so that he can get his secret decoder ring, and it turns out that it's an Ovaltine commercial, and that's what the secret code is that he uses his decoder ring. It's drink more Ovaltine. But think about that for a minute. Think about how marketing back then was tied into the idea of giving people tangible items. You received a Frisbee. You received a decoder ring. You were able to hold a glass from McDonald's or Burger King. And you walked away with something tangible that, well, with respect to the glasses, if you were smart, you kept, and now they're, you know, worth a lot more. But it's just something that you walked away with, right? Even to the extent of going to the movies in the 70s and 80s, you'd go to the movies, and on more of the blockbuster movies, like I remember Empire Strikes Back, you could buy a movie program. Do you remember them? You'd go into the theater and you'd get this pretty nice bound magazine type movie book, and it had some behind the scenes stuff in it. Now that took a lot to create when you look at it from a production standpoint. You know, they had to have somebody put together that program, but that was a way to walk away from that film without, you know, not just, I should say, to walk away from the film, not just having the memories of what you just experienced, but having something tangible. And with that tangible element, maybe you would tell other people about the movie. Maybe it helped you remember what you saw. Maybe it was something, a piece of the film that you could bring home with you, so that you could look back and remember what you saw, how you felt at the time. But that's all part of what I consider the 70s and 80s marketing. It was a focus on physical items that you could collect. And it was targeted really around broad audiences with generic messages. So if we're going to talk specifically about marketing tactics, then we're looking at it was a broad audience. So what do I mean by that? Well, when you go to McDonald's, what happens if you weren't a Star Wars or Star Trek fan? They didn't care, right? They thought, all right, Star Trek is a big enough thing right now, or Star Wars, or whatever film it was, Jaws, big enough hit right now that we think we're going to be able to appeal to most of the people. And most of the people are going to be so interested in collecting these glasses that they're going to come to McDonald's, they're going to come to Burger King. And so we don't need to be specific in targeting our audience. We just need to be generic. We need to hit the largest group possible. Now, that's interesting when you think about something like Star Trek, for example, as opposed to Star Wars, because in 77, when Star Wars came out, nobody knew what it was. There were rumors, the trailers were out there, but people didn't really have a grasp on what it was that they were going to be experiencing when they saw the film. So they didn't have a lot of merchandise at the time, including marketing merchandise like the glasses. That didn't come till later. And if you know anything about Star Wars figures collecting, you know that Kenner, who was the original creator of the Star Wars figures, had a deal with Sears where you could get this early bird special, which would include all of the original figures on this diorama or stand where you could put the figures on. And they did not anticipate the amount of interest in the figures based on the popularity of the film. And they were backordered for months and months and months. And people who got these early bird specials had to wait for a very long time to get them. And now, of course, from a collector's standpoint, they're so highly sought after to have that original set of the early bird special. But my point is that you look at something like Star Trek, again, we're talking about that generic message. Star Trek, having been an original television series from the 60s and being a cult classic, being a popular show with likable characters, advertisers like McDonald's knew that just based off of the popularity of Star Trek, that if they released glasses, drinking glasses, before the film actually came out, people would come to McDonald's to get them. And they weren't targeting everybody. Keep that in mind. They weren't saying, all right, we know that Sally likes Star Trek, but Joe likes Jaws, so we're going to offer Joe the Jaws glass versus Sally the Star Wars or Star Trek glass. What they did is they just cast a wide net. They said, all right, we think that the vast majority of people, we had to put down a high percentage of people like Star Trek. And therefore, if we offer glasses as a marketing tool, people are going to want to collect them. They're going to come, they're going to buy McDonald's, they're going to get their glasses, and we're going to make money from that. So they appealed to the masses in a generic fashion, right? So you wouldn't see collectible items in marketing for, I don't know, obscure or not so popular films. Like, for example, you didn't have a big run on collectible items for something like the original Blade Runner, right? It wasn't until years after Blade Runner came out that it became what it is today. And arguably, it's a cult classic, one of the greatest science fiction films, if you're, you know, into science fiction. But it didn't have that mass appeal at the time. So that's why at the time there were very few marketing efforts used on films like that. They knew that they couldn't specify their targets. They just wanted to cast that wide net. And they did it with collectible, tangible physical items. They didn't look for interaction with their patrons, right? The interaction that they wanted was to make a purchase, was to buy a Happy Meal or a cheeseburger. But they weren't looking for engagement, I should say, right? It was one way. It was from brand to consumer. That's it. There was no interaction. There was no dynamic interaction. But that's what marketing was in the 70s and 80s. Now, let's jump ahead to modern day and look at how modern marketing strategies have changed. And then I want to throw out some questions for you because I have some thoughts that are going to tie in some of the legal aspects of this episode. So talking about today, how many tangible items do you get from a company who's trying to market to you? How many things do you physically take away? I mean, yes, I understand that they still have stuff at McDonald's, Happy Meal toys and things like that. But when was the last time you were able to go to Burger King and buy or collect the Simpsons Halloween figures? Do you remember those figures? That was, I think, 90s maybe. But they had at Burger King those collectible Halloween figures. Go look on eBay. Go see how much those things go for now. But the idea was you'd go and you'd collect them over time, and it forced you to keep going back until you got the whole set. But how many physical, tangible items do marketers today offer you? Think about the last time you went to a fast food restaurant or a movie theater or an event, and you walked away with a physical item that, and I'm not talking about a giveaway. I'm not talking about going and getting a stress ball or something like that. What I'm talking about is active marketing campaigns like they used in the 70s and 80s. And I think you're hard pressed to find anything like that in today's world. What you do find is this heavy, heavy, heavy reliance on data-driven, AI-focused, or generated specific marketing content. And it's a massive shift from what we saw in the 70s and 80s. You know, what we see now from marketers are tracking pixels and other digital elements that track the way we search or shop online. And based on those habits, we receive not tangible items. We receive digital marketing prompts. We get a coupon. We get an email that's specifically targeted to a product that we were looking at. I mean, you all know what happens when you say something out loud anywhere near an Alexa device. You know what happens. You know that whatever it is that you were thinking about, even if you don't verbalize it, all of a sudden comes up in your social media feeds, right? Tell me that that's not the case. I don't know how it works. I don't know how they tie in to the deep recesses of my mind, but they do. And it's like bizarre, right? You're thinking about, you know, hey, I need a pop-up tent to put out for a barbecue that we're having. You're just thinking about it. And the next day you wake up and there's 50 choices in your email and on your social media feed about pop-up tents. Like, how do you do that? Of course, I'm joking about the mind-reading capability of it, but you know that that's just the way it works out. But that's what our marketing strategies are based on. It's based on personalized marketing efforts and then engagement through technology. We're talking about the 70s and 80s where the engagement was kind of one way. It was from company to consumer and nobody wanted to hear anything from you. They don't want engagement in the 70s and 80s. They want you to collect the glass and come back for the next glass when it comes out. But in today's modern marketing world, we see heavy engagement. You've got brands that are asking for feedback. They're looking to get you involved and engaged in whatever it is that they are offering to you. They want feedback. They're adaptable in their approach. They're looking for that two-way communication that they weren't looking for in the 70s and 80s, partially because there was no vehicle by which you could really effectively use two-way communication. What are you going to do? Put a suggestion box in a McDonald's as far as what you think about the glasses? Of course not. You get your glass, you go home, and then you come back next week to collect the next one. Whereas today, they want this two-way communication. They want to hear from you. They want to know what you like and what you don't like. They're looking for feedback. They're looking for you to help market the products for them. When you like a product and you leave feedback on Amazon or you leave feedback on Google or wherever you might leave it, that is in and of itself a marketing tool that the company did not have to pay for. They didn't have to pay for that. They had to pay for the product. They had to pay for the delivery vehicle, the website, the shipping, things like that. But they used their two-way communication and interaction with you as a means to generate free marketing. You are giving them free marketing, and that's why it's so important that companies receive positive feedback, at least from their perspective. They don't want negative feedback because that is the antithesis of what they're looking for. They don't want negative because negative is the exact opposite of the marketing that they're seeking to get. Now, a lot of the bigger companies, they're willing to roll the dice. They want to have the majority of comments being positive. They're okay with the risk of a few negatives on a percentage basis because the overwhelming majority are going to be positive. So look at and compare the two marketing strategies that we are talking about today, the 70s and 80s versus today, how drastically marketing has changed. I mean, drastically. I'm going to argue even in television commercials, even in print ads. I mean, there's very few print ads, in my opinion. It's not like, you know, you are reading the funny pages like we did in the 70s and 80s on Sunday morning. It just doesn't seem to be that way anymore. But arguably, print and television media, it's different the way they market to you. The product ideas, the way that the commercials were produced and run, the characters that were created. I mean, think about it. Think about Camel cigarettes, for example. You had the creation of Joe Camel, a character who was able to convey a feeling of coolness, right? Oh man, Joe Camel, he's super cool and makes you want to buy Camel cigarettes. Now, obviously, cigarettes is a bad example because of the harmful effects of them and the desire by consumer groups to prevent that sort of marketing. But put aside the fact that he was trying to market cigarettes and just look at Joe Camel as a character, right? You connected with Joe Camel. Look at all the popular cereal brands, you know, Tony the Tiger and Toucan Sam. Now, I struggle to find that same marketing in today's print and television media. How many new serial characters can you think of within the last 5 to 10 years? I don't know. I struggle to think of new serial characters. What's the marketing now? It's on health. It's on convenience. It's on, you know, whatever rational thought processes that we might use. It's not so much based on the characters. And so that's another huge shift when you think about it from the 70s and 80s to today. Now, I don't know what you liked better. I mean, I certainly prefer what happened to the 70s and 80s. I mean, that to me was a lot more enjoyable and it felt different. I mean, I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I'm creeped out when I open my email and I see the things that I was thinking about or surfing on the web for. I mean, that's frustrating sometimes. It's like, come on, you're in my head and I don't like that. I want, you know, to be able to think for myself, and I don't like it. But here's some interesting thoughts to ponder. Why have we moved away so drastically from the 70s and 80s marketing routines to what we have today? And how much of that change, how much of that shift is based on liability risk? What do I mean by that? Well, back in 1979, when Empire Strikes Back, the second installment of the Star Wars series, was coming out, if you were a toy guy or girl, you remember the Boba Fett missile-firing action figure. Now, it was a promotion, so you would collect the little circle points on the back of the Kenner action figures. And if you saved up enough, you could send it in, you could get a Boba Fett rocket-firing action figure. Well, what happened? Well, there was risk associated with it because apparently the missile had fired and injured a child. And so they said, all right, let's pull the plug on Boba Fett and his dangerous missile. And so they stopped production of the missile firing version. I don't even know if it was in full production. I mean, because I've seen so many documentaries about it, and it was just prototype based and wasn't really in the marketplace yet. And they made a Boba Fett that didn't fire a missile. The missile was just glued into the backpack, and that's just the way it was. Now, why did they do that? They did it to avoid liability. What about cereals? What about, having prizes in cereals? Was there any thought, and this is what I want you to think about, was there any thought by the manufacturers or the companies as to liability associated with putting things in the cereal? And not as simplistic necessarily as, you know, we're going to stick a Frisbee in here and some kid's going to accidentally eat it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, what's the risk of having a Frisbee in cereal? Is there a risk of, you know, somebody buying the cereal and being injured by one of the devices that are in it? Whether they're playing with the Frisbee outside and they get hit by a car, is there some kind of causal connection? Is there some sort of liability that can run? Now, whether there is or isn't, that's not the point. But my thought here is, and this is what I want you to think about, what impact did that increase, and I'm going to say that there has been an increase in litigation from the 70s to today, hands down. And I attribute that partially to the absurd and obscene number of lawyers that there are in this country. I also connect that to the ease of finding legal information online. Whether it's a podcast like this one or any of the other resources that are available online, people today have a much easier time trying to figure out what their rights are. I mean, you just, you know, somebody looked at me the wrong way and it made me feel bad. You type that into a search engine and you're going to come up with emotional distress and all kinds of other things. And now you've got some sort of baseline for your potential claim. And then you find a lawyer. And again, there's so many of them, you're going to find one that's going to help you, that's going to take your case, and then you're going to sue. And so how much of that increase, significant increase in liability, played into the change in a marketing strategy? Or did it not at all? Is it just a matter of evolving technology? So think about that. Now, the next thing I want you to think about is, what impact did cost have on the marketing that was done in the 70s and 80s versus today? I mean, clearly, there was a cost associated with creating the Star Wars or Star Trek drinking glasses. They had a tangible item. It had a value. They had to purchase them. They had to have the images placed on the glasses. But what does it cost to insert a tracking pixel in a website? I'm going to argue next to nothing. So is that the reason why we see such a shift? Is it purely cost-based? Is it that marketers today say, why would you spend any amount of money on a glass, a drinking glass, or a figurine, or an action figure, or a whatever, a Frisbee, when we don't need to do any of that? We don't need to produce anything, nothing tangible. All we have to do is market to people by sending them email. It doesn't cost anything. Sending them coupons. It doesn't really cost anything. You know, does the cost, is that the real driving factor? Now, any of these things that I'm throwing out to you that I want you to think about, it could be a combination of, and I'm sure it is. But where do you think the main focus is? Do you think it's liability prevention? Do you think it's purely cost? Like, if you had to say, this is the primary reason why marketing has changed so drastically from the 70s to the 80s, or 70s and 80s till today, which one of these things that we're pondering here do you think had the most impact? Now, I'm not done. What about consumers? What about the intellectual and emotional development of consumers today compared to the 70s and 80s? Now, obviously, we're the same life forms. We have the same organs, the same brain, the same things we think about. The same stupid things kids did in the 70s and 80s, they're still doing today. So it's not that we have somehow genetically changed, but what is it? Have we emotionally and intellectually changed? I mean, I can tell you from a young adult, child perspective, kids today are interested in completely different things than we were as kids. So how is that, or how does that play into marketing efforts? You know, I spent a lot of time outside when I was a kid, as I'm sure most of you who are my age did, playing football in the streets, running around the town, you know, playing sports in the town, things like that. You were outside more than you were inside. Today, you're begging kids to get outside because they're glued to their devices and screens, and it's a completely different world. So has that shift in, let's say, focus for children had an impact on marketing? You know, not that we are smarter today, but have we matured, even if it's at an unhealthy level? Has our interest changed from things like being outside and playing to being inside and watching something on a screen, or interacting with something on a screen, or social media? You know, have we lost some of the innocence? Have we lost some of the things that you know, we as a generation or as people had in the 70s and 80s? Were we more easily entertained by a Frisbee and a box of Frosted Flakes? Do kids want a Frisbee anymore? Or are they like, what the heck is this? What do I do with this thing? I got this round plastic disc. What is this? You know, so has that emotional and intellectual shift likely brought on by the increasing use of technology, has that had or has that been a cause of the change in marketing? You know, and what I mean by that really is, has the internet and social media forced our children to grow up faster and to have less of an interest in things that are arguably more innocent than today? You know, I mean, today you've got kids that are seeing these basketball players drop new shoes every other month. It's like, you know, you've got new Mellows that just came out, and here's some Jordans that are coming out next month, and that's their focus. And then that whole tie-in that we talked about earlier with the pixels and the marketing that's digitally based and personalized. Now we know if a kid's searching up LaMelo Ball shoes that, you know, these companies are going to be able to track that and then send other related products to them in their feed on social media. And now that's their focus. Are they less excited about the things that you can walk away with, the tangible items that you can walk away with from marketing, like the glasses, right? What are you getting there when somebody markets an ad to you? Well, you're not getting anything. You're just getting an invite to make a purchase, as opposed to what you walked away with back when I was younger. So, you know, look, I mean, I think that when you want to put this all together, you're going to say, well, it was a combination of everything. It's cost, it's liability, it's interest. Of course, you know, things change, people change, what we like and dislike changes. Okay, I get it. And you know, you're probably right. If you thought about those things and said, it's a combination, yes, it is a combination. But what I'm interested in is, what do you think had the most impact? You know that we've had a change in interests from our young people based on technological advances. You know also that there's been a massive increase in litigation from the 70s to today. So is that a factor? And you also know that costs have escalated. I mean, you guys go to the grocery store. You know how much things cost today. It's absurd. So I'd like to know what you think the number one contributing factor is. Is it cost? Is it liability risk? Or is it our evolving likes and dislikes? It's an interesting discussion for sure. There's a lot of pros and cons to how marketing has changed. If you ask me, I still would prefer to go to McDonald's and get drinking glasses. I still would prefer to collect them. That to me, you know, is maybe it's just based off of nostalgia. Maybe I'm so old that I can't get over the fact that people are tracking me online and listening to me on audio devices and then telling me what I should buy and showing me things that I'm interested in. And that's not to say that I'm not susceptible to those ads. They do a good job for sure. You know, I might be searching something up and the next day I see an ad for it and I buy it. So effectiveness, which we haven't touched on, you know, how effective is today's marketing versus the effectiveness of the 70s and 80s campaigns? That is certainly an interesting question to ponder. What's more effective? I don't know, to be honest with you. What's more effective? I know what I like more, but I don't know what's more effective. So I think this was a very interesting discussion today. It's kind of different from what we normally talk about. But when you think about it, I think that it is kind of eye-opening and enlightening, and it really makes you think. And I think that thinking is critical, and I think that we don't do enough thinking. So hopefully I have prompted you to think today and make some decisions and opinions. And this is this is a very interesting topic. I'd love for you to talk about this topic with your family or your colleagues and get their two cents on it too, because when you start digging deep into it, there's a lot at play here. So it's interesting, and hopefully you have enjoyed this episode and this discussion. Let me know what you think, and let me know what you believe contributes to this massive shift in marketing and what the cause of it has been. So let me know. Obviously, we'll post in social media so you can post your comments there and let us know. No pixels. Not going to be tracking you. I'm not going to be offering you anything. Just some good old-fashioned two-way communication that we are experiencing in the modern world. So let me know what you think. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure that you tell people about the podcast, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Understanding the Law Radio. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. We're available anywhere that you listen to your podcasts, including Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many more. Also, don't forget to check us out online on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks again. See you next time.